Hi, I guess paying respects to Jugger and the Turrbal people, and paying respects to everybody else that made an effort to come along here today, Mark and Travelling and Robbie and other people. And I guess I'd like to say a special thank you to the younger people who got this together. You've done really well. And, you know, this is another example of not having to sit around and wait for someone else to give something to you. These fellas got off their backsides, no money, no nothing, and they were able to organise this today and be able to pull this together as well as the embassy and everything else. So, you know, full marks to young people who are involved in it. I guess if I ran over and died tomorrow, I'd be quite comfortable. No, it's going to keep on going. The question's not going to stop being asked, and that's what it's about. But I guess going on from what Mark's covered it pretty well. I guess it's something that's been, I guess for the last, I just want to ask everybody to stand, I guess, for a minute's silence. We've lost a lot of people in the last 12 months, and one particular has been Isabel Coe. We went down, Brother Doodaloo and I went with, and Sister Gwenda there, and they were all fortunate to go down to the funeral and participate in the funeral, represent Brisbane Mob. She was a pioneer, and when I talk about these people are just as important as Malcolm X or Martin Luther King, or I guess the old lady that jumped in the bus in Mississippi. We should be speaking about these people. When we speak about these people, like Isabel Coe, we should be speaking of her in the same demeanor as what we refer to any of the freedom fighters in America. These are great people. Uncle Don Brady, the people that you see around this wall here, they're the people that, you know, a lot of people look at sports people and footballers as heroes. Well, they're not heroes. They're role models. These people here that you see around here, people like Isabel Coe, and Robbie was here in 82, Doodley's been here, other people have been here, they're heroes. They're the heroes, because every time we walked down in them streets in those illegal marches, we had the guns pointed at us. We had guns with real bullets pointed at us. Real bullets. In 1982 in this city, they were so shit scared of 3,000 black fellas being in that park that they declared martial law. Martial law. They brought the army out of those, everywhere, out of Waikawa here, out here on the streets, against 3,000 black fellas, none of us over 25 in that park. That's what I call heroes. Men and women that were willing to go out illegally. In that 2 weeks, if you wore the colours in this town, we were getting locked up 300 and 400 at a time in jail. Marches, every time we went out in that street, we were getting locked up 40 and 50 at a time. And when you went to jail in those days, you didn't walk out of jail, you usually ended up in hospital because they flogged the shit out of you in the jail to the point where you woke up on the cell wall with no clothes on and bleeding. And then you went to the hospital. This is what I'm talking about. This is when you went to jail in those days, that's what happened. This river here, during that time and leading up to that time, once wasn't unusual to find a black body in the river. They'd pick you up over here, flog the shit out of you, throw you in the river. And if you swam, you swam. If you drowned, you drowned. And it wasn't unusual. We used to drink all along here, all the way along here, all the way down there. I was 14. We weren't just drinking in Mushroom Park. We used to camp and live all the way along here. And they'll be pulling bodies out of here all the time. So when we talk about these people, Isabel, and we talk about Uncle Don Brady, and we talk about Dennis Walker, and we talk about Rossi Watson and all the other families that have the courage to come here and fight, and the people on Palm Island, and the people on Yarrabah, and the Gurindji walk off, and all these milestones, the Mile Creek Massacre, when we talk about, and we talk about Pamela, and we talk about Dunderley, and we talk about all these warriors, and we talk about all these heroes, they're heroes, and they're just as important as Sitting Bull, or Martin Luther King, or Nelson Mandela. But there's one quote that we all forget, and that we all fall in, and this is a trap that we fall into, and that trap is that, you know, we're bloody fools. We're fools. What fools would send their kids to the enemy to get educated? You know, we'd start sovereignty. Everything starts at home, in your house, with your family. It starts there. The truth, the education. You don't send your kids off to a school and expect them to come back and be the next Martin Luther King, or the next Don Brady, or the next Dennis Walker, or the next Robbie Thorpe, or the next Mark McMurtry. Don't expect it. You're foolish if you do. We've got to start this stuff, and it starts with us. And the opportunity to start this stuff was given to us by a lot of those heroes. By a lot of those heroes. And so we honour those heroes with Men of Silence. Just remember about those heroes, those people. That's the legacy. Their memory only dies when we started to stop educating our kids about them. So just remember those fellows for the next minute. Thank you. Okay, have a seat. I guess I won't keep it too long, but I guess where I start from is that in terms of the sovereignty and self-determination, and a lot of other words go hand in glove, and we've been doing a lot of work over the, you know, the last, I guess, if you have a look at that photo around there, you'll see a bloke painting a sign up there in the wall. Well, that was me when I was 19. And I just, when we got turned down and we arrested, so when I was here in 82, we were getting 19-year-olds, we were getting locked up and that sort of stuff here. So I've seen a fair bit happen in Aboriginal politics and Aboriginal Australia. I guess a lot of people come and go, and a lot of things change. And I think I sit back sometimes, and it's quite amazing how much has changed, and how fast it has changed, and how it has changed. And I look at it, for me, I grew up on a dirt floor, much the same as a lot of your parents, the same as my other brothers here and sisters here. I grew up on a dirt floor on the bank of the river because we weren't allowed to live in the towns. And up until 1967, my first 5 years of my life, I was considered an animal, part of the flora and fauna. We've heard Mark talk about that with the 67 referendum. But prior to 1967, that's all blackfellas were, and it wasn't illegal to shoot us. So that was still the state of play when I was growing up. So I've seen a lot of things happen, you know. I've seen 1982, I saw for the first time all the prisoner of war camps, and these are Cherbourg, Warrabinda, Yarrabah, Mornington Island, you go through Dumaji, all those were set up as prisoner of war camps. That's where the worst of the worst blackfellas were sent. That's where the troublemakers were sent. That's where the ones that didn't want to be Jackies, that's where they were sent in Queensland. Well, I actually saw that and saw those communities be handed back. This here, this march here, created a situation where all those missions, all those prisoner of war camps were actually handed back to Aboriginal management, where those people in those communities had a chance to govern and manage those communities and take possession of those communities the first time. A couple of years later, I saw New South Wales introduce land rights, and they took 7% of the state land tax for 10 years was given to blackfellas in New South Wales. I saw, I guess, the Northern Territory, and the South Australian Land Rights Act come out. So we've seen a lot of things come and go, but I've also seen the NAC, which was a national voice, a national government. I've seen ATSIC come and go. I've seen Congress now try and sit up there and do things. So we've seen all these things come and go. And a lot of things, some good, some bad. But the last 20 years, I guess, has been the hardest. The hardest questions, the hardest time for Aboriginal Australia, for First Nations people in Australia. The last 20 years has been the hardest. All those other changes that have came about because they were social justice changes. They were changes that the average Australian and the average person around here could relate to what was happening in the deep south of America. People could relate to that. They could relate to what was happening in Mississippi or down in Tennessee or some other Ku Klux Klan movement. They could relate all this stuff to Australia up until the last 20 years. In the last 20 years, it's been real hard for the rest of Australia, non-First Nations people, to relate to what is going on in First Nations Australia. It's been really hard. Prior to that, it was quite easy. The questions were black and white. The 1967 referendum, for example, was a simple question. Are these people animals or part of the flora fauna, or do we consider them as being human beings? So 97% of the Australian public decided, okay, they were humans, that we were human. That was supposed to be a real hard question to answer, but it was a bloody hard question. It cost them a lot of money and a lot of effort, because a lot of people I don't think could read. But that was the question. Are these people human or are they not? And it took ages for them to answer that question. And we almost lost it. You know, that's a pretty scary thing. You know, it reminds you of what was happening in 1938 in Germany. You know, it reminds you of what was happening in the 1800s up to the 1900s and 1930s in America. It was a bloody hard question. Take us to the last couple of months, 6 months ago. We had the same thing. We had a question, a referendum, where the rest of Australia was going to come together. They were going to spend $200 million on the question about ownership, constitutional change about recognising the ownership of First Nations people to their country. You all heard about it? You need this constitutional change so that you, First Nations people, know that you once owned this country. That's what and it's going to mean bugger all to you anyway, but we're going to spend $200 million on it. The first time Black Australia has been able to stand up and argue and say to people, shove your constitutional change up your ass, we don't need another change, we don't need to worry about it. We don't need the $200 million, we don't need Mick Dodson, Pat Dodson, Marcia Langton and everyone else that's on this exceptional panel, Noel Pearson, expert panel that worked 3 years to devise four questions about that basically summed up the situation that we no longer own the country. Four, they spent all that money. It must be a really confusing situation, but my kids know the difference between when they got a bag of lollies and they haven't got a bag of lollies. You know, it's not a difficult situation. And you don't need PhDs or doctorates to work it out. But this is a situation. And so I've seen that happen. We've all seen that happen. So the first time in history, we've actually been able to tell the government, don't set up another situation we're forced to chase our tails and argue a bit between ourselves. We've been through the situation where people say, oh, you can't say that in public, you can't denigrate another black person, you can't talk about it like that. Well, that's bullshit. And I've always said it's bullshit, because we've always had good blackfellas and bad blackfellas since the day that Ben Long decided to go with Philip and Pemulwuy decided to throw a spear at him. Yeah, we've always had it. It's part of haves and haves not. That's part of colonialism. It's existed here. So all these things are given, but they're not taught. And if they're not taught in the schools, that's why people turn up here and then try to listen to something. And there's always people that try to procure other things by lack of information or giving out the wrong information. Sovereignty is something... Well, it's a word, but it's sovereignty is something that you either have or you don't have. And right now, in this continent here that people call Australia, we've got two groups that have differing opinions on sovereignty. You have First Nations people that believe that sovereignty is what something that we have and we've never seceded. And then you have the colonial, I guess the powers that have come here, and the dominant society made up of non-First Nation people that believe that the Commonwealth and all their infrastructure gives them dominion and gives them sovereignty over this country. So that question's always going to be argued, and it's going to be argued by other people like Michael Mansell, or other lawyers. Going to be argued in the courts, it's going to be argued everywhere else, and that's good. Because the more people that are arguing about it, maybe one day we'll come up with a solution to it. But me and other people, I guess, and where I come from is that we believe we never gave it up. We don't believe we give it up. Every day we practice it. Every day we participate in a Cold War situation. That's the only way that you can decide the coexistence at the moment, and that exists in Australia, and that has existed until such time as this question, the question of sovereignty, is answered. There will always be two societies that occupy this country, two groups that occupy this country, and two groups that assert sovereignty. So, and then they will always have conflicting areas that when they come together, and so therefore you have a Cold War situation where you're not spearing each other and you're not shooting each other, but you're still arguing the point and you're still fighting each other over that word of sovereignty. So that Cold War will always go on, and it will go on until such time the sovereignty question is going to be answered. But as Mark said and other people have said, this government is hell-bent on not answering that question, and it's throwing money after money after money to avoid answering that question. And that'll always happen until such time as Mark's able to get his case up, or Michael Anderson's been able to get a case up, or someone else gets a case up. But and until that such time, I take the attitude is that we've got to be the agitator and make sure that fight's kept there, and that fight's from our side of the fence is always going to be keeping going. And the processes that are there is that for every action that the dominant society throws at our people, we have got to counter, and we have got to have an army, and we've got to counter that. Whether it's in the street, whether it's in the classrooms, whether it's in the children's services office, in the docks, whether it's in the court every day, whether it's catching a bus, whether it's raising an embassy, whether it's going to participate in a mining hearing. Everything, our job, my job as a Puma man, as a warrior, is to be able to defend our sovereignty at every opportunity that we have. Every opportunity that arises, whether it's a Gitabal, Kuma, Gungari, Wankamara, our responsibility as warriors belonging to that country, and representing our money, our country, is to defend our sovereignty. That's our job. And if we do that within our law, on every occasion, no one in the world can judge you as being anything but defending your country, as being a warrior. Then we need more warriors. We need more stand-up warriors every day, men and women. And that word, if I would have spoken that word 30 years ago, I'd still be in jail. If the words, the language that we're allowed to use now is it's satisfying and it's actually a lot more direct. But if we had spoken those words, if we talked like this, myself, after 82, I just was on the bike, going to South 82, there was 10 of us that was named by Jockey Peterson in Parliament here, and me and my brother were one. And if we got caught in Brisbane after the games, we had to undergo psychiatric assessment. And this was the order of Parliament. So there was about 10 of us. We all had to leave Queensland for about 2-3 years until he got voted out and we could come back. But this was the processes that people don't understand that was going on. So in today, we need the warriors, we need people to stand up and to defend the sovereignty of First Nations people in this country. The process that is really unclear, and this is the last 20 years has caused this, is that the involvement of non-First Nations people and our ability to convince and to educate and make aware the non-First Nations people about their responsibilities in answering this question is something that has been purposely bastardised over the last 20 years. No fault of your own. It's been something that the MPs, the governments, the state, local governments and the education system has purposely done, so it creates that gulf for the last 20 years that everyone thinks, oh, these fellows are happy with their native title process. That doesn't exist. What I've been doing and Doodle have been doing is that we've been going out talking to as many non-First Nations groups as possible. And saying to these people, look, you call this country home now. You're calling this continent home. Whether you're Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Muslim, Middle East African, but you've come here and you've called this country home. Therefore, us as First Nations people, you know, we have a responsibility that if you're going to come and live on our country, you know the rules of the country and you know how to behave in the country. Because right now what the situation is happening is that you're coming in to a country that is occupied or that is being controlled by force, and that question of sovereignty, or the certainty about sovereignty and the doctrine of this country is under question. And when we talk to people of the new arrivals, we try to explain to them that there is a place here in this country. It's a great country. There's a lot of wealth in the country. There's a lot of opportunity in the country. And it's better than dodging bullets every day from much of the homelands that they come from. And they call that civilized. Yeah? Don't know when you're going to get bombed. Don't know when you're going to get shot at. Don't know when somebody is going to come in and grab your kids, and then there must be a shocking situation. But we've lived through that. We've lived all through that, and we've still been able to hold ourselves and be able to approach these questions in a civilised way. So that question of the new arrivals, what are the new arrivals? What's their role in answering this question of sovereignty? Do they want to answer the question of sovereignty? Do they want their kids to grow up in a place that's not founded on bullshit and lies? Because that's what it is. My daughter burns that flag because it's a flag of lies. That's what it is. People come up to me and they say, I'm that drunk, oh, my grandfather fought under that flag. And I said, well, what war did he fight in? Oh, he went away overseas in the First World War. And I said, well, the flag didn't come into existence until 1948. So this is bullshit. And this is what they're trying to teach you, your kids when you swear citizenship down the road here. That flag was a contest run by the Women's Weekly, I think it was, or the Post, where there was about all these people rode in with their flags, and then in 1948 they all voted. We didn't get a vote on it, but they all voted and they chose that flag. So no one bloody went to Old Glory and waved Old Glory down the street and said that they went to fight in bloody Japan or Korea over that flag. It was bullshit. Didn't have a flag. But this is what they teach them in school.
It's just like the story about the Union Jack. I never planned the Union Jack in Sydney. It was a Queen Mary flag because the Union Jack wasn't planned until 1800.
Yeah. And then they didn't plant it on the island up there either because they got chased off the island. All the mob up there will tell them. But the thing is that's the bullshit that they tell us. Like, so when I say to the new Australians, this is some of the rubbish you've got to sort through before you can come here, and it is a responsibility. It's a big responsibility. And to come and participate and then be a part of the country, because this country here, what you've got to understand from our history is that this continent, this bit of land is occupied by 500 different nations. 500 different nations. That's more than sit on the United Nations. Isn't it? That was the United Nations. This country here, for 40,000 years, was occupied by 500 different nations. This continent. One more nation comes here and fucks the whole lot up. Fucks it up in 200 years. You know, how dangerous is that? How demented is it? And what purpose? So that a few of them can get rich and a few can get poor. But this situation, so what you've got to understand is that 500 different mobs we occupied this continent. And what I say to people is that we manage this country. Before the last nation arrived here, the last group arrived here and asserted its sovereignty, we managed and occupied and made decisions over this country, the 500 different nations around here. And did it quite well, and did it quite competently without any fuss. Our law enabled us to do that. Our communication system, our infrastructure that right across the length and breadth of this country enabled 500 nations to live in peace and occupy one continent for well over 30,000 years. That's a pretty crazy idea, right? 4,000 years and they're killing one another, threatening to drop bombs on each other around the world. Here we had some order of governance that allowed us to coexist and independently exist and to prosper in this country. That's the question it means when I get back to sovereignty. When people ask me what it means, is that I want to get back to that position. I want to see us as First Nations. I don't care if they want to keep shitting on each other, they want to still kill each other, they still want to pump themselves silly with drugs and alcohol. That's their blue. If they want to do that, they can do that. But we, as First Nations people and other new arrivals that want to participate in what we're doing, want to get it back together, that's our responsibility that we owe our kids. I don't care what they do. And by getting on with the job of actually getting back to that stage,